Okay, well, welcome back to Still Processing. And we're in.
We're right there right now.
And I'm here with
really open.
Yes. Melissa and David Bennett's here for his residency as theologian
in residence.
Yeah,
you got it.
Scholar.
Yeah.
It works.
It works.
It all works.
Well, Dave, you built the model for it.
Yeah, and I just forget
the name. Whatever you want. The David in residence.
Yes.
And so Melissa taught yesterday was excellent sermon on Jacob. And I think what I've been processing since yesterday was it has been how good Jacob kind of fits into this whole thing, like how good that story is, laying over all the work we've done so far in identity to give it like a really good flesh and bone sort of thing. And you have been talking about him every sermon meeting since the beginning of this whole sermon.
I know.
It will always go back to Jacob for you. Always.
It feels like we have a common trait, the three of us, that like we're processing something and everything will relate to it.
No. Oh yeah, 100%. I can make anything relate to almost anything.
The first sermon meeting we sat in, I need something like what I said yesterday, like, what do we do? I need to like see it in action. I need like the practical, I need the like Office or Seinfeld reference that like connects it. So I have something to make it real. And yeah, when the minute we start talking about identity and transformation and how like the confrontation that lives in that, I just like Jacob. Yeah. And I think I said in that first meeting, like I raised my hand and was like, just a thought, like somewhere in this, you could really do Jacob because he just like fits in really well. And then, two weeks later, I get that text.
Yeah, like, do you want to do Jacob?
Actually, what you said was, do you want to do Joseph? Didn't you say you wanted to do Joseph? And I was like, Jacob? And you said, any forefather that begins with a J will work.
That sounds like a text thread with me for sure. Yeah. That's so funny.
Joseph might work, but I didn't do that.
Dave Lomas text threads.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, the depth of that story is insane. I mean, depth of all those stories in Genesis are crazy. Mm-hmm. But that one in particular, that whole wrestling thing for me, what I was getting, what I was processing yesterday in the sermon and since then was the like everything from Jacob, his whole like scheming life, his whole like life self-protecting and trying to make it work because he was like he had to be almost like a self-made person.
Yeah.
Probably gets that from his mom, probably.
Well, do you know what's cool is it's just, and I think this like layers really well, it's just his whole family of origin. It's the story of Abraham. It's the story of Isaac. Yeah. And it's the story of Jacob.
So like his bones, yeah.
All of them. I mean, they all struggled to have children. They all tried to find other ways to make it happen. They all had to like maneuver and like kind of scheme to pull things together. And it's almost, I almost feel like God kind of like intervenes, not just in Jacob's life, but he intervenes like in the whole lineage. He's like, with the three of you, like, I have had it. Like, I am getting in the way and I'm renaming. Like, what if they were originally supposed to be called, like, the people of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? And God's like, nope, I don't like Israel. You get a new name because this, like, you guys have nothing but mess behind you. But there is, like, a real redemption story happening, not just even for Jacob, but for the ways of his mother, his father, his grandfather, too.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about how we have this kind of evolutionary impulse to control life and to really like, do exactly what Jacob does constantly. We're trying to find the way to survive best, to get on top, get our genetics through, get the blessing, take the food. Looks like get the most sheep.
Someone, you guys should read
the sheep.
The whole thing, the way he, I'm telling you, the detail of what's written about Jacob's life in the whole like six or seven chapters is so good. The like thing he does with Laban's sheep, his like scheming about breeding the sheep is fascinating. I like no time to get into it, but I was like, this is like some
optimization. It's optimization. It's like it's like superstitious. It's like
sheep hustler.
Everything that you would imagine someone who's like I either make this happen or I die.
He's like the Elizabeth Holmes of, yes. of the Old Testament. Yes. He's like, this is working.
This is going to work. This has to work.
I don't know if that'll offend people here. Elizabeth Holmes.
I don't know who that is.
But yeah, I mean.
I was just rolling
Elizabeth
with it.
Holmes?
Yeah.
Oh, the dropout. She did the whole blood testing.
Oh, didn't they have a documentary on her?
Yeah, a lot of things. Movie, a TV show.
Okay, Ash watched it. I
actually, you know what? She's a lot like Jacob too.
Yeah. But okay, did you ever tie
Theranos.
This?
Sorry, continue. It's Theranos.
Oh, yes. Okay. Ash did watch that. And she would tell me about it, give me a whole download after every episode.
You should
episode.
Listen to that podcast. It is so good.
And I was like, I don't have time for this in my head.
I don't have time for this in my
this
head.
This is kind of like you and Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, basically. Okay, fine. Like, you've been married for how long? This is on
this
you.
Is
this
like
is not me.
You and Shawshank Redemption.
No, I think, like, the longer you're married, the more you're like, hey, listen, I've already done all that stuff. You're just starting, so you have to do all the stuff.
Okay.
Are you guys getting Jacob on each other about
yes
movies? I feel like there's a wrestle happening here.
There is a wrestle.
I will watch Shawshank Redemption. I will watch it.
I can't believe you haven't watched it.
Oh my gosh. I was a very sheltered child. I was a theater kid. I was like preoccupied.
Did you ever connect in your sermon? Oh, maybe to second service, but I was thinking about it afterwards on like how Jacob sent everyone over to Isaac. Didn't they have to cross a river mm-hmm. to get to him? To Esau, what'd I say? Isaac, I'm sorry. It's one of the J's. There's so many Old Testament characters. Sorry. There was something about his wrestling and then his newness and then passing through the waters, having to cross over. I feel like the Apostle Paul, would have done if he was doing a letter specifically about identity, he probably would have done something like that. Because Paul does all that with the Old Testament. He takes it and it's like, what that means is that rock that was falling them was Christ. Or he does this like spiritual, and they went through that. It was their baptism.
It's Talmud, right? Like that's the like, you know, the original. You would sit around and say, well, it's this.
Yeah.
It means this.
That happens, which is what we're doing right now.
We should call this Talmud.
all of our Jewish friends who are part of our church will be really excited or maybe offended. But no, that does that even in the text because of the last part of that passage is like, and to this day, no one eats the hip because of, I'll pull it up. But I mean, even in the moment of the text, there's something that's like, there's meaning that is like explicitly attached to what's happening in the story, which is beautiful.
The depth of that whole thing and how it overlays our identity has been to me such a picture of like a new name. That person has to die. Yeah. That old, not like you improved, like you didn't get an improved Jacob at the end. You got like a different person.
Yeah.
Which is, I think the identity journey is one of like, not just like an improved you, but a new you. Like Jesus didn't come to make people better, but make people new sort of thing.
Yeah, I think there's a really beautiful clue in Jacob's story, which relates to disability, minority-based stuff, but just generally suffering and weakness, which is that there's this like mark of our identity transformation and the pain that happens in identity transformation. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned as we were discussing this podcast, actually what you felt came out in the message was people's pain of I actually have to somehow be crushed to be freed from a wrong view of my identity or I need to somehow go through this painful journey to get there. But I know it will ultimately be better for me, but I still have grief about letting that go. And I think that wrestling moment to me feels almost like the human soul yelling at God. You know, of like, do you know, have you ever found yourself in those moments in life where you're just like exasperated? Yeah. There's so many layers to what you're going through. You can't express them all. And you're just like, God, where are you?
I think that's why that's why the picture I showed, why I loved that the artist, her name is G. Carol Baumer, and she's out of Asheville, North Carolina. But it was the only thing I could find and like the perfect thing that I was looking for that like captured all of that angst. Like there's something, to what you're saying, Dave, like there's something that's captured in this, the fact that it's physical, like the, mm-hmm. that God comes as man, like flesh and bone, so he can like literally put his hands on Jacob, and mm-hmm. then Jacob can put his hands on him. Mm-hmm. And like that, how much of like our embodied experience is like the vessel in which all this identity stuff is getting worked out, and how, you know, when you get angry, you want to throw a plate or you want to punch a wall, or there's something like your body wants to like act on that, that God would meet Jacob in that and say, you can act on it. Like, I will receive the wrath of that from you. And and that, like, that to me, and I didn't have time because I knew it would just draw me into a whole other place. But like, to me, like, this is Jesus, right? Saying like, I will take that wrath for you. Like physically, not just emotionally, not just intellectually. Beautiful. I will like literally physically hold all of that. And I think a lot of what I heard yesterday from people afterwards is not just the pain and suffering of like what it'll cost, but just that exhaustion and the overwhelm of like mm-hmm. how much work it is to figure out what about you needs to change, and then to like say goodbye to those things and have a hope for something better. Like, it's really hard to, if you've got something that works and you're holding on to it, it's so hard to let go of it, not knowing what will come next, or if it'll come and what it'll look like, and the faith it takes to like open our hands up. And it is a really emotional thing. And yeah, I was saying before, I think that we've approached it pretty intellectually, and I think you have to, because you have to understand it. If you don't understand it, then you do just get swayed up in the emotion of it. And it's like, oh, like God wants to make me new. But if you can't articulate what that means, then you'll just kind of get swayed into the flow and just as easily get swayed out of the flow. But if you really understand it, and then you have to like commit to the emotional, theological, personal work of it, it's a big thing.
Yeah, that hits on something I've been processing this entire series, is that the first time I did this series 13 years ago, whatever it was,
Did you hear my accidental little nod to your book?
No.
I think in the first service I was like, because it is the truest thing.
No, I didn't.
And I realized the minute it came out of my mouth, I was like, dang it. come back. Sorry, like, 13 years ago.
It's the, I'm trying to think of a synonym that would go, but anyway. So 13 years ago when or 14 or however long it's been, when I first taught on this, it was actually really emotional, because I remember I was going through something very similar, mm-hmm. Almost like 2 weeks ahead of what I was teaching. Mm-hmm. Things that I don't advise pastors to do, like don't go through a thing and then teach it like 2 weeks later. But it happens, you know, it happens sometimes, because sometimes like it's so
Instagram.
Real. Yeah, it sounds like it is your Instagram.
There's not a 2 week delay on your Instagram.
It's like a 2 minutes. It's actually 3 minutes before you feel it. Then you post it, and then you feel it.
Actually, we should go for 2 week delay. Just, that might be helpful.
I'm just wrestling.
Yes. And I remember it being very emotional because I was going through it, and I made a very conscious decision this time around that I would approach it not as emotional for that reason, because you could get swept up in it. And because you're talking about identity, everyone's very fragile when you start bringing up that subject.
Yeah.
And you can just pull people in almost like, not manipulatively, but if that's even a word, but like you'll draw them to, draw them into something that they might not understand what's happening, but they're just drawn into this. So I try to approach it very, very intellectually, but also theologically. Mm-hmm. Which is why we were basically in that passage in Matthew the whole time. But it does need this emotional flesh and blood. And what I find too is that there's some people that will have heard yesterday or even the series and been like, okay, cool. And you can't, the thing is with this thing, you can't actually choose when you go through it. I don't think Jacob chooses when he wrestles God.
No.
And I think the God becoming man and wrestling with Jacob is like very like Bible, very explicitly, when we are up against something in life and we can't get out of it. Like Jacob was going to meet Esau. Like he couldn't get out of that. Mm-hmm. He was going to face him. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with things like this, with our identity getting shifted or things, it's like God conspires with our lives and it confronts us so deeply that we have no option but then to wrestle.
Yeah, I think for me there's, you know, I remember distinctly going through the lockdown, seeing the Anglican communion tear itself apart in the most ugly ways could say so much about that related to sexuality. Being this like public figure, having to get on national television to defend beliefs that the bishops should be defending, not me.
Yeah.
Like feeling like just every bit of weight was on shoulders that are mine and yet shouldn't be mine.
Yeah.
Like, and there, yeah, it was part of that that I should carry. We all carry things, but like the rest should have been other people. Mm. But because they weren't faithful, I had to do it, you know? And like feeling this almost like deep, this insane kind of grief that I couldn't really put in words. It was like a baby, you know, was inside, but like an anti-baby. That makes sense.
No. Yeah.
Of just like, this world is screwed up and this is not okay. And like the church itself, which is like another level of grief, is turning away from itself and falling away and like seeing the miscarriage of God's own church. Mm. Like it was just intimately happening like in your own vision, your own body, like imagining, I don't know, watching one, being one of the prophets, watching the people of Israel like worship Baal. Like, could you imagine like what that would be like?
Yeah, totally.
You know, and I'm in that space. And then I just remember God speaking to me and saying, David, don't let the wave of grief crash upon you. Let it crash through you. And I feel like there's something about the recalibration of identity and grief that like what your sermon started to touch on was people in the room had so much grief about not really being able to be themselves or find where that comes from.
Yeah.
And the frustration and the anger, you know, and you see that in Jacob. He just wants to be blessed. He just wants to be who he actually is, but he can't. He keeps opting for this like hustle, opting for like less than, stealing his brother's blessing, strategizing to survive and never being able to get that word from God, like, you are my son and I love you. And to see that now, like, Christ has wrestled with God, has gone through the cross, you know, has, so that we can be baptized into that affirmation where, in some sense, whilst we will still wrestle, the core truth is we don't have to grieve like that alone anymore. Like, the Spirit is actually in us. Mm-hmm. And that's what I found so amazing about this moment is I let the grief come out of me, and it was like I wasn't doing it. It was like Christ had done it, perfected that process, and the Spirit was like, let me do it in you, because you can't actually do it.
Yeah.
And there's something about how he, like you said, the visceral nature of God coming as this like angel man to like wrestle, which is like pre-incarnation, like kind of basically saying, I kind of have to become incarnate.
Yeah.
So you can
there's a whole other part of the grief that's out, so good.
You know, and that like God has done that. So now the Spirit can live in us, and so that that wave that tries to steal our identity, if we don't let it pass through us, like, so it doesn't crash and destroy our identity, it actually goes through us so we can find who we are in Christ there, already done for us, perfect righteousness. No need to like, and I think that's one of the like, counterintuitive things about identity, as we think we have to construct an identity, or and it's actually, well, maybe we have to find it, but it's actually already there. Like, we are already who we are in Christ, but it's not been fully realized yet. And so the pressure is off in one sense. But to get there, there's still this wrestle. There's still that grief of letting go of my control, my way, my Jacobness. You know,
I think there's like an interesting thing too that comes up with that, that I kind of at some point in my sermon writing process, this was in there. And then I, again, just like don't have enough time, can't get into it. But like some of the like theory around identity crisis and how identity crisis, like nine and a half times out of 10 is always triggered by a point of like life crisis, whether that's trauma or loss or significant life shift. And so, you know, kind of to what you were talking about, David, that there's this thing that happens, and if our identity is oriented to that thing, when something shifts in that thing, it's like we lose our footing. We don't know how to relate to ourselves anymore, because how we related to this thing is how we understood ourselves. And so that's why, like, an identity built around work, when you lose your job, falls apart. And there's, like, almost this really amazing mercy in that, that, like, God's like, yeah, go ahead, try to build your identity on this thing. And when it falls down and you are out of options, I'll be here. And, like, I'll be ready to help you rebuild it on what won't fall down, which is me, Jesus, God thing, right? And, like, I think there's – we are very, I think, used to this idea that, like, trauma or loss or anything that kind of, like, turns our world upside down, like, we're very comfortable with this idea of, like, be gracious with yourself, be patient with yourself, kind of give yourself time, grieve, whatever it is. But then there's, like, this almost counter movement that it feels like God's inviting us into, that's like, yeah, right where everything falls apart, lean in even harder and, like, be taken apart. Like, Jacob was in a crisis, and then God breaks him. And it almost feels unfair, right? Like, I'm about to die. Like, why do you have to? But there is something about, like, God needs everything else to be taken away so that that thing that he has put in us can fully be rooted only in him and not in these other things, which won't last. And there's, like, a weird mercy in the and horrible pain in, like, yeah, that reality.
Well, I think that the reason why the story goes, Jacob's about to face his what he thinks is his demise, yeah, and then this happens, right, is because that is life. That's literally how life goes. You face what you think is going to be your demise. Like, I lost my job. My life is, I actually came to Christ out of an identity crisis when I was, like, 16 or something, is like I got kicked out of school for selling drugs. And I thought my life was over because I had so identified as, like, I loved school because, not because of education, because my friends were there. And yeah, I loved, yeah, all of my different, like, you use that, you brought that thing up, Mike, our executive pastor, who were you in high school? Yeah. And I was like, him and I have had this conversation before.
I think,
like,
Mike loves this question.
He does love this question. he was a youth pastor at one, yeah, time, so this is definitely a youth pastor question.
I hated high school.
Yeah. Oh, you did? I loved high school because, like, it was my goal to try and, like, befriend every single friend group, yeah, whether it was the theater kids and the jocks and the weird goth. And I would love to just, like, pop over, and of course, like, I'd also sell them drugs. So that's kind of also why I was trying to get
little entrepreneurial. Like,
yeah. So like, yeah. Anyway, and then getting removed from that school, I remember feeling like my life is over because that was my life.
Yeah.
And then that, at that moment, is the moment where Christ revealed himself to me. Like, I saw a vision of Christ. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any sort of Christian furniture or framework or anything like that. I just didn't grow up in church. So, but, and I think the reason why that story is told that way is because that is exactly how life goes. It's, mm-hmm, usually at these points of where we feel like our life is going to end, those are those moments where we can meet God, because we get exposed, like our like hearts, our minds, our lives open up to, we wouldn't frame it like this, but this is what's happening, new possibilities. Like, the hardest thing just happened to you and you're not dead. What now?
Right.
And something opens. Yeah. And we wouldn't explain it like that. If when we're going through it, it feels like things are ending, but actually things are beginning. And so that's when we there is an opportunity to meet God at that moment, because God does make himself known in these moments of, like, deep pain. And they happen over, so you're a room filled with hundreds and hundreds of people on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. You have this sense that there are probably amongst this large group of people a lot of people who are at that very moment right now. Yeah. And those are the people that, you know, God meets. And then there's other people that are, like, they're just storing this away, and they will have to live this sermon, yeah, that they liked. You know, like, I liked that one. Mm-hmm. You'll like it until you have to go through it and, yeah, live the sermon. Living sermons are way different than liking sermons.
Yeah. Do you know what's cool about this? And I this light bulb only went off for me yesterday between services. I was talking to someone that my like, life with Jesus changed when I was like 21. I was living in LA. I was attending Reality LA, and Tim Chaddick taught on this passage with 2 Corinthians, my grace is sufficient for you, my strength, mm-hmm, is made perfect in weakness. And that like changed. That was the pivot point for my life. And there was from that sermon of him talking about Jacob, I like went home and I like got on the floor of my like nasty little LA apartment and I pounded the floor and like said to God, like, I will not let you go until you bless me. And I didn't even know what I was praying. It just felt like that was like what my soul was crying out. And which is why this passage has meant a lot to me over the years, is like that was a pivot point for me. But I was not aware of it in that moment, but there was something happening in who I was that was shifting massively. Like coming out of that season, I was literally becoming a different person. And to see how, even when you're not, like, how much more are we going to be able to be equipped for it when we are aware of it? Because God's mercy to let us kind of walk through it even when we're not. That there is, you know, if I guess to the person who's like, this series is just like not hitting me right now, if and when it will, when it does, like, to have this in your tool belt, not just like yesterday, but this whole series to help form and frame how we think about identity and like give us language for what we're wrestling with will be huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, in some sense, I feel like our modern identities are often like rotten trees and these diseases come into them and rot them, and like there's something still good about the tree, but it can't quite like become itself. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's how so many of us feel after everything that's happened. Like it's particularly COVID, particularly like this big theft of time and space and our own resources. And we're all in a moment where we're facing our identities aren't working. And on these like big levels of like our societal conversations, you know, on some controversial topics like trans and sexuality, that's all kind of not working right now.
Yeah.
And we're looking at the like geopolitical and things aren't working. And people are putting identity against identity. And I was just thinking, you know, God is the God of the stump. You know, he loves the tree cut down. Like he loves it when that old tree is finally gone and he can bring that fresh shoot from Jesse, like that fresh moment. And I was just thinking, gosh, Lord, I want to give you more of my like stumpiness. You know, I want to be less of this, like, I've got this perfectly worked out identity.
Yeah.
I'm actually more like a stump. And like, let you be, make me the tree. Like, I do want to be an oak of righteousness. Yes, I do want to be planted by that river. Yes, I do. I am. I have all these things. And yet, it has to be you who builds me. Like, I can't make myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing I took when I was contemplating your message on Sunday. It was like, I can't make myself. Yeah. I am not my own creator. Like, I really am not. No one is.
Yeah.
Why do I try to create myself?
Yeah.
You know, like,
because that's like, that's everything about the world around us tells us, like, it's you are your creator, like you are your own canvas, like,
and it's
the messaging of everything.
It sounds so liberating, but it's such a lie. And
it's such a burden.
Oh,
what a weight. Like, you better make yourself something that's going to be impressive and stand up next to all the other impressive things and people.
And the crazy thing is too, here's the lie, that if you don't create yourself, you never get to create yourself. And I think that's a lie. This is the C.S. Lewis thing, is when you find your life in God, you not only get God, but everything else gets thrown in. So you actually do get to do that creative stuff that you've wanted to do with like your life or your future, or even your like your physical body. There's some things that people want to become, you know, physically, like, I want to become stronger. I want to become whatever. I want to become this or that. And we think that we have to go out and create it. And then we think, which is a lie. The other lie is, if you give your life to God, then you'll never get to do the things you really wanted to do. And that, again, is another lie. Mm-hmm. Because when you find your life in God, not only do you get God, you get all that other stuff. So you get to start now creating around this secure place with in Christ, a security in Christ that isn't, that your whole life isn't just that one thing.
Yeah.
That thing you're trying to create, it becomes a part of a bit way bigger narrative where it's built or created on this foundation that is Christ, which I think is been some of the funnest parts of being a Christian, you know, in my adult life is that, that like with God creating, with God innovating, with God entrepreneurialing, you know, you get to do all that stuff, but you do it with God from this secure place. Because I remember when we moved here to San Francisco to start this church, I'm like, this is going to fail. Mm-hmm. There's no way it's not going to fail, mm-hmm. but I'm going to do it anyway because I could, I'll be okay. If this fails, I can work at Trader Joe's mm-hmm. and I'll be happy. Like I could do this mm-hmm. and it was that sort of like, I can do this and what I thought was going to be the end of my life if it didn't work, after I had gone through being fired. I mean, all the stuff that you go through when you're trying to like start mm-hmm. something. For me, I got fired from a bank because I couldn't count money, which is just a bad career choice when you can't count.
Which is weird considering your early start as a drug dealer.
I never said it was profitable. It was never profitable, ever. It was I was really good at getting the product to the customer.
You needed a.
I was not
you
good
needed
at
an accountant.
Yeah,
I you was needed not. A Tariq.
I needed a Tariq.
And at the time, he probably would have helped you out, man.
Tariq made a lot of money moving drugs, and he was young too. He made the money. But it landed him in prison.
When I was like scoping out reality, and I was like, oh, okay, so they've got like an ex criminal as the prosecutor,
and
an
ex criminal
as the finance, and then they're getting.
And you're like Australia. You're
a
like
gay
this is my
activist yes. as the legend resident.
You're like this is my people, Australia. Yes. We know to take it.
With a real convict.
We know, yeah. yes, and take we'll it and build something done. Way better. Yeah, so I forget where I was going with that. But building
okay,
around that.
But,
yeah, building around mm-hmm. this solid thing, yeah. you're able to do the things from a different place.
Yeah.
And that's the lie is you'll never be able to find, once you give yourself up, you'll never find a self.
Yeah.
And that is the lie.
I think actually there's another lie too. And I tried to kind of get into this yesterday. I wish I had more time because I wanted to get more into it. I think there's also a lie that God is not that good, or that what God has is not that good. I remember growing up with this like voice in the back of my head that was always like, if I say yes to God, he's going to make me go to a country I've never heard of and like give up everything I love.
I should think that too. Yeah.
Yeah. There was this like fear of like saying yes to God because it would literally cost you everything. I actually, one time I was like walking somewhere with my old school iPod with like the little clicky wheel.
Oh,
and I was like listening to music, and I had this like, I walked, remember those donation giant bins, like the big, you open the door and you drop your clothes in. And,
mm-hmm.
and I remember feeling like, having this compulsion to be like, what if God wants me to put my iPod in there? And like, he's asking me to give it up. And I just like was so traumatized that like, I won't give it up. I love my iPod. But like, what if God's calling me to? And what if I have to go to like Africa? And like, it just felt like this big picture of what I was not willing to let go of. And I think there's something like, and maybe it was growing up in the era that I did in the Christian world, but there's this like weird fear I have that like if I say no to what I want and yes to what God has, it won't be good, or it will be frustrating, or it will cost me more than I want to give, or it will be disappointing, or it will be hard, and it probably will be hard. And there's just such like a fear around that. And I think like we lack a vision of how good God is and how good what he has for us is.
Yeah, not good like materially
no, but like,
good, but like good. If God called you to a place that you didn't want to go,
it would be good.
It would be good.
Yeah, but we don't have any sort of vision or frame of reference
That's
for
right.
like how that could be good because
yes.
you only see the cost. And I don't know how to build more vision for that, or how to like have faith for that or believe that. I guess it's just in like hearing testimony of people who have done it and saying like this is good. But I think that's a big wall to climb over. And I know that was coming up for people in the vocation series, that there was this big fear around like, if God's asking me to shift my vocation and what he's calling me to is not as like comfortable or set up or established as what this is.
Yeah.
That's really, really hard.
I've been, that very question I've been meditating on, thinking about for a few weeks now. I'm teaching at a conference in a few weeks, a very, 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 very generous, wealthy people. I'm like, what am I going to say to these people? Like, I'm like,
I couldn't count at the bank, guys.
Yeah. What am I? And then I started to think, the mental sort of problem solving I was doing in my head, or the thing I was doing, was thinking, if I was really wealthy, and if someone was asking me to be generous, what would be the thing that would allow me to be generous? Would it be that, I mean, I would imagine people who are wealthy and generous hear all the time the guilt talk, mm-hmm. the like, God wants you to do this talk. Mm-hmm. This is what Jesus has done for you, and you should give because of Christ gives to you talk. Mm-hmm. And those are all true and all really, really good. And if it was me now, I don't know if that, because I've had heard those. I think what it would be would, and I think this gets back to your question. This is what I've been meditating on. Is it Catherine Siena that said, in the end, all will be well? And I think this idea.
All manner of things will be well.
Yeah. Yes. All manner of things will be well. Mm. That's right. And there is something about it will all be well, that part of like a trust in God's goodness that would open my hands.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Like, if you gave away all of your wealth, it all will be well. All will be well. Mm-hmm. If you lost all your wealth, it will all be well. And it's just getting, I don't know how to get to there. I might not teach on this. I don't even know how to get there. Maybe in 35 minutes, so I might have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But this idea of like the security in God, mm-hmm. to such a place that you're so open-handed with everything. Mm-hmm. You have this sustained openness to the will of God. Like,
I remember I was teaching this young archaeologist at Oxford. Like, she's a Jewess, and she, you know,
is that proper? Is that how you
say? Yeah, I'm gonna let it go.
Yeah, whatever. She introduced me.
She's Jewish.
She's
fine.
Jewish, but she was.
No, she's Jew.
She's a Jewess. Yeah. Like, she's a woman. Yeah. Jewish person.
Yeah. Well, she described herself that way.
I'm gonna start calling you that.
But she said, like, and she's exceedingly posh as well.
Oh yeah, so that's why.
Yeah. Yes. Antonia Freshwater Edwards was her name.
Really? That's a great name.
And so there is this like poshness about her story. Was just so full of change, so full. She'd been to Australia, she'd like all these things, and she was searching for her identity. And I was teaching her about Abraham, and she didn't really know anything about Abraham. I'm like, he's your like forefather, like, yeah. You are like descended from him, you know. And she, and anyway, like, as I was teaching her, God kept like nagging me about the word faith in Hebrew, and I was like, okay, I'll get to it. So finally I get home and I like look up this word aman, mm-hmm. in Hebrew, and it means like, it means the steadfast place that you could like hitch your tent, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's where you could put the tent peg and it wouldn't, like, if a storm came, you would be okay. Mm. So they would go around, you know, nomadic peoples, like Hebrew people, would go around looking for that aman space on the ground. And I was like, oh my gosh. And basically, our identities, like who we are, we need aman. Mm-hmm. We need faithfulness. Like, you can't have an identity. You can't be human without that security. You need a place to hitch your tent. You need a place for that steadfastness to actually work.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, everything falls apart. And so many people are going around San Francisco, Sydney, all these places I've been in, they do not have aman. Mm-hmm. They do, and they're looking for a faithful place, a steadfast place. And that's what I was just thinking, like, God is making us into that, but we are never that. So we're always going to have fracture in our identity. We're always going to struggle to know who we truly are up until the resurrection. But underneath us is the one who is truly aman. Like, he is the true tent peg. He is the cornerstone. Like, he is the one upon which God's presence can dwell on the earth and human identity is redeemed forever. And so we can rest our weight, even though we're never going to be fully that aman place. We can rest our weight in him. And I think wanting to give people that security in the church without saying that we are it.
Yeah.
You know, like, the church is never going to be fully aman. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
And so many people are like, I want to like build a Christian identity. I want to build my identity in the church. I want to da da da. And like even at Oxford, you've got these like super bright students that are, but they're all over the place. They don't have this faithfulness, this one thing, this pearl of great price, this field that you sell everything for, this like, you know, lover that you say, I'm not going to have any other lovers but you. You know, like, mm-hmm. it, and I think that's, for me, what identity is ultimately about is what is the greatest value? What is the thing you place greatest value on?
Yeah.
And I think the journey of faith is faith to faith. It's from a faithfulness so that then you become faithful.
Yeah.
And your identity is healed as you become a faithful person for others, you know? And that, for me, I think an other-centered view of human identity, where you see that shift in Jacob, where suddenly he becomes other-centered with his brother. He's like, no, you have my sheep. You know, like, no, you have my life. I give it away.
Yeah.
You know, God, you have my life. I deny it. There you go. Like, that steadfastness, that safety, that faithfulness produces faithfulness in us. And that is healthy identity, I think.
That's good.
This, the kind of comment on like stability and safety, I think feels really important, maybe more so for some people than for others. Like as someone who's really oriented to safety and stability, that I think that's why it's so difficult and so emotional. Like it's asking, God's asking me to take up all the roots I have. And that will take me, that will make me not who I am. And it will like, it'll like disorient me to a point of like, how do I function? Go ahead.
Well, okay, this brings up something that I've been thinking about as well since yesterday, is that Jacob's name was like heel grabber, deceiver. Mm-hmm. And then after wrestling, God named Israel, one who struggles and prevails. Mm-hmm. His new identity is still who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is like you're someone who struggled with God.
Yeah.
And prevailed.
Yeah.
And so the identity still isn't like this thing that God just pulls out of nowhere, like, boom, look at this. And you're like,
right.
A clown? Like, I'm supposed to be a clown? What does that even mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's actually the part of like the thing that God has made you and how God has conspired with life to make you. And it's all kind of wrapped up into that.
Yeah.
So it's not good. This like completely different person. It's like, oh no, you're someone who struggles and prevails.
Yeah.
Versus.
And you had, there has to. Not like the, and like we see that in hindsight, but it takes so much faith or courage or hope or belief or even like community to stand next to you and like say you can do it, to believe that if you let go of that thing that has stabilized you, mm-hmm. that something that is still going to be good is coming in behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the, I mean, that moment of like, if I let this go, I mean, that's it's dying. It just is dying to self. Like it's mm-hmm. in that moment. I one of the things that I was remembering working on this was, did you guys ever read or watch The Crucible?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is theater nerd. This is like
Salem Witch Trials. Yeah. It's and so, about Puritan community and yeah.
So, Arthur Miller, who wrote it, was like one of the, he was blacklisted during like the communist hearings in the 50s and the 40s, a long time ago. Yeah. And I did a bunch of research on this, but I forgot it because I was maybe going to use it. But The Crucible, like he wrote The Crucible during like all of these, all the trials that were happening with all the people who were blacklisted, trying to like name names and like get people up the Communist Party, because he was like, this is a witch hunt and this has happened in our country before. And so he wrote the play to try to kind of like capture the moment. But so in the play, there's all this kind of speculation around this one woman and her husband, John Proctor, played by Daniel Day-Lewis, mm-hmm. Like basically intervenes to like kind of say, like defend his wife and ends up becoming the center of the whole thing. And like the pinnacle of the movie is he basically agrees to sign a paper saying that like he and his family participated in witchcraft. And if he signs it, then he won't be hung because he'll have admitted to it. And then he can repent and then they can move on. But all their other friends have just said, no, we didn't do it. And they did hang and they died. And so he signs the paper and he's like holding it. This is now in the movie version because it's very dramatic. but he's like holding the paper and they're like, okay, give it to us. And he's like, you saw me sign it. Why do I have to give it to you? And they're like, because we need to like show it to the church that like you have said you've done witchcraft. And he's like, but you can tell them like, don't take it. And they're like, why not? Just give it to us. And he like, this is like the famous speech. And he like screams, he's like, because it is my name, because I will never have another in all my life. You've taken my dignity. Let me have my name. Mm. And he ends up like tearing the confession. And he's like weeping with his giant like smile on his face because he just feels so freed that like he has not betrayed who he is. Mm. And then they like take him off to kill him. Spoiler, sorry.
Gosh, well, I don't have to watch the movie now. I'm going to tell it's you all of so Shawshank good. Redemption now.
Winona Ryder is like...
Yeah.
She's the main
girl who's accusing everybody.
Yeah. But, she does such a good job.
Yeah.
She's so great.
There's so much power that we have put in who we are. And like we feel this like fierce protection. Like this is... Like it is my name. This is who I am in my whole life. This is who I will always be. And for you to try to take that and change it feels like such... it's like such a loss because this is mine. It is who I am. And yes, if you can have a guarantee that if I give you my name, you will put something better on it, I'll give it to you. But that life does not come with that, right? And that is following Jesus, trusting that what he has for you is better. And that is just, following Jesus is hard. Taking up your cross is a hard thing. And man, I think going through this sermon, just feeling challenged in all the ways that I value stability and security enough that I'll kind of stay in my little pocket where I know things are really stable and good. And like, what would it look like to say like, okay, here's this thing that I really love and that's really like stabilizing for me, but I'll loosen my grip on it, even if that means what I get back is not necessarily what I think I need right now or, you know, what I want even right now. And that is so hard.
Yeah. What do you think, Mr., about the fact that it's our name and yet God is going to give us this totally new name? Like, this is something I don't even know theologically. I'm like, what?
But well, no one knows because it says a name that no one knows. But God.
The end. But okay. God.
The end. Solved that bit of revelation. Now we just have to do the rest of the book. All right. Well, this has been fun.
Good.
Yeah. Until next time.
Until next time.